Is there a reason why, you know, there's still going to be like a vacant lot south of that?
That's a good question. That one might be directed itself. Okay. I think one of the reasons why there's a gap of property that self-help doesn't own.
Okay.
Yeah, so good evening, Mayor Pro Tem, members of the council. My name is Betsy McGovern-Garcia. I'm the Director of Real Estate Development at Self-Help Enterprises, and I've had the pleasure of being in front of you several times for Palm Terrace 1. We've had some naps, a bit of rest. We're ready to go again and get moving on Palm Terrace 2. So we're excited to be in front of you this evening. To answer your question, you know, we could have taken multifamily all the way down to the end of the property. That would have likely yielded another, you know, 30 to 40 units. And we just wanted to be conscious of absorption rates and the market for rental housing and not overdo it on that site. So we actually have a remnant. We're planning 10 single family homes, which will be constructed through our self-help program. So once we get Palm Terrace 2 off the ground, we get all the financing, we'll start thinking about mapping that remnant parcel. There is a vacant parcel in between us and the end of the row. I have made several efforts to acquire that property, but weren't able to come to consensus with the owner on a sales price. And so we haven't been successful yet, but ideally we'd pick up that other remnant parcel. I think it's around an acre and finish off, the entire street. So that would be really phase three of this project. Per the staff report, we're proposing a similar approach as we did with Palm Terrace 1. We are preparing an affordable housing and sustainable communities strategy, affordable housing and sustainable communities application. Those applications are due in early February. And in conjunction with our housing project, we're able to include a whole suite of amenities that are focused on improving transportation, providing infrastructure, and really facilitating non-motorized transit, primarily walking and biking, ride-sharing, vanpool, those types of improvements that reduce the number of single-rider vehicle miles on our roads and in our communities. And so we've met with staff several times, and really this was contemplated to be the entire project from the beginning. We just broke it down into smaller, more manageable phases. But the roundabout was really designed with this addition to the project as a second phase to the project. We will look at including several million dollars for the transit center if we can help be a partner in your efforts to build that facility and secure the capital. It is grant funding. It is not loan funding. It's grant funding. So there's no obligation for repayment. We have been having lengthy discussions with TCAG about that also and making sure that we're integrating with the sustainable community strategy, the active transportation plans, and all those various transportation planning efforts that have gone into your community to making sure that we're meeting the residents' needs. So we would fund the transit center. As mentioned, we'd also look at doing sidewalk gap closures and other infrastructure improvements. So if there's a child that's walking from east of our site, they walk a little bit on a nice sidewalk and then hit a dirt patch, maybe go out in the road to avoid it. It's an unsafe situation. We want to really look strategically at all the areas within a mile radius of the site to say, where are our kids encountering issues? And they're not always obvious. It might be barking dogs or an unsafe block for another reason. And so really looking at that and including those improvements in our application. We're also able to fund some improvements here out in front of the city facility just to make sure that folks can access city services and attend public meetings. So that'd be a combination of sidewalk improvements, ADA improvements, those types of things. All of our applications include 3 years of free transit passes for all of our residents. And so the hope is that they will use our newly constructed sidewalks, walk over to our newly constructed transit center, hop on the bus, shoot into Visalia for employment or shopping or whatever folks use the transit system for. So it's really intended to be a comprehensive approach. What we weren't able to fund in the Palm Terrace 1 application, we're looking to pick up in Palm Terrace 2. And that application can be up to roughly $5 million for this application. So we have the flexibility to be creative with those improvements. There actually is 9 buildings here. What you're seeing is the ground floor footprint, which has a walkway through it. And then the second story covers that up to make it one contiguous building. So the architecture will replicate what we see in Palm Terrace 1. We found that to be really well received and good for our families. We're making one adjustment in Palm Terrace 1. We had one-bedroom units on the second floor, and we're finding that a lot of senior citizens or folks with disabilities need those units. So we've moved those one-bedroom units to the ground floor and then have moved a three-bedroom unit to the second floor. So we're learning as we go. We're improving the product type and really trying to be responsive to the needs of our residents. And with that, I think I'll end. Oh, and hopefully I addressed your question about pedestrian activity and connectivity and filling in the gaps and really making that safe. So if there's any other questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
We had gone to a conference about the sidewalks of being proactive for the elderly community to where, you know, if they have to use their scooters or whatever. Are you or has self-help even thought of that? Of making the sidewalks wider?
Yeah, so we try to follow, first and foremost, the requirements of the city that we're working in. So your adopted standards for those sidewalks is what we would adhere to. And then we try to follow the existing development patterns within existing neighborhoods. So if, you know, we have a really narrow sidewalk and we're connecting two gaps, we might widen it. Widen it up in that segment, but we don't want it to be so far different from the existing fabric of the neighborhood. And so we are really thoughtful about those things. And I think anytime we do sidewalk improvements, we make sure that we meet all of the slope requirements, the corner ramp requirements, and all of those ADA requirements so that folks in scooters or with other types of mobility challenges can use those improvements. Another thing that we can do within AHSC that we might want to think about, and I'll be happy to talk with the city team about, is education and outreach. In other communities, we have funded marketing dollars for the transit center and potentially organizations that serve like the senior center or the library to do some really focused outreach. We did a little bit of that with the roundabout when we had received some criticisms on that. Trying to make sure we were connecting with senior residents to make sure that they knew how to use that facility and were safe. And so if there are ideas for community-based organizations that are working with senior populations or youth populations and we want to do some kind of targeted education and outreach, we can do that. We can also beef up the transit subsidies to reach a broader population if there's interest in that. If you think that there's a new segment that will start using the transit center, once that's constructed, we can talk about including that in our application also. So I say that the limit on AHSC is it's only limited by our creativity. We have the ability to look at your community and partner with you and determine what is really needed here to help folks use public transportation to walk places safely and to bike. So we'd love to receive that feedback.
And something,
I was going to say, that's one thing that we've seen over the course of 25 plus years. And what we tell people is it doesn't matter day or night, you're going to see people in Lindsay walking on the sidewalks. Mm-hmm. Our focus is always, and if we're restricted by existing improvements, if we can put an 8 to 10 foot wide sidewalk in, that's what we're going to do to support the amount of people that we have walking. And,
right.
And again, it's walking to employment, walking to shopping, or just walking to get around. So Ono City and the City Park are prime examples of what we can do given an unrestricted space. We have a 20-foot wide sidewalk on the south side of Ono City. Every sidewalk inside the park is 8 feet wide. Mm-hmm. So, but when we look at Westwood, we're really limited by what we can do there and the frontage improvements that can be done.
Yeah, I understand that, but that's a place that's most congested. Mm-hmm. And I believe you had stated earlier that when you had decided or when we had decided on that roundabout that the second portion of the apartments wasn't considered.
No, it has always been contemplated since the beginning of the project. So when we did the design of that roundabout and analyzed the impacts of that, that was designed with the understanding that we would ultimately build this 54 units in addition to the original phase one.
The color scheme? Oh, sorry. Did you answer?
I just had a quick question. I didn't see it on the first phase. I don't know if there's a wall between the, I believe those are mobile homes for the senior, and then on this side I see a few houses. Is there going to be a wall?
Yes.
A block wall?
Yeah, we want
in phase one. Is there a wall there already?
There is. There is. Mm-hmm. It's a 6-foot CMU.
Oh.
Color scheme will be in phase two will be basically the same as phase one?
Not entirely decided yet. I like a little bit of variety, but we've also received really good feedback on the color scheme. So we don't know at this point. We have a project in Goshen that we're building right now that has some lighter blues and grays in it, and so we've been changing up color schemes. And so if you guys have strong feelings about that, we'd love to receive that input, or we can circulate those elevations when we have them ready to go.
The exterior design is basically the same.
It is.
Okay.
Right, the elevations and everything like that.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That is very well done.
Oh, I have another question. On the tiers, that's one thing that I got a lot of feedback of when you were first constructing the apartment houses, is that the tiers were for very low income.
Mm-hmm.
And we have housing that's for the higher income.
Mm-hmm.
But that middle income
mm-hmm.
is not being, I mean, their needs are not being met.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way to extend the tier? I know the other apartments across the street from you have like 3 tiers.
Yeah.
And they're able to get those middle income people in. But with yours, we can't.
Yeah. So per our funding sources and also our mission as an organization, we only assist low-income families. So that would be 80% of area median income and below. Within that, we do have multiple tiers. We did have deeper income targeting on Palm Terrace 1, and that was mostly a function of the funding that we're using. The state of California directs what income levels to serve in order to be competitive. Since Palm Terrace 1 was constructed, there has been a round of corporate tax reform, which they have allowed for income averaging within the low-income housing tax credit program, which means we can now serve 70 and 80% AMI families, and then that's averaged out with the lower-income families. So we have not settled on that final mix yet. This is the first step, and then our AHSC application will be the second step, and that's when we'll start to flush that out by the end of the year. But we will absolutely keep that in mind and work for as much diversity within those tiers as we can.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I have one last thing. So the apartments are phase one are beautiful. I'm assuming these will be just as amazing.
Yeah.
But as time goes by, who is in charge of ensuring that maintenance, you know, of the buildings remains, that,
sure.
you know, that the property remains in pretty good condition? Because, you know, as we've seen, other apartment complexes come along and then after they're beautiful to begin with, but then after years, they're run down and not
mm-hmm.
taken care of. Is that something that self-help, you know, makes sure that continues throughout?
It is. So we use one property management company for our entire portfolio, which is currently 33 properties, right around 1,500 units. And so we have a established set of procedures and protocol for the management of our properties. We own our properties in perpetuity. Under the tax credit program, it's a minimum of 55 years. We have been around 55 years. Hopefully we'll be around another 55 years. And not me, but someone will be standing in front of a future council talking about the project. And so we walk into it as a first forever investment. When we structure the projects, we have what are called replacement reserves. And so we take a set amount of money every month out of the rents that are collected, and we put it in a reserve account specifically for the purpose of maintenance and upkeep and making sure that these units continue to be high quality well into the future. Many of our peers, mostly for-profit organizations that develop affordable housing, they will stay in their transactions for a shorter amount of time. Typically 15 years is a tax credit compliance period, and that's when they yield the most of their return, and then tend to sell them. And so in those scenarios, they can allow for disinvestment because they know they're going to sell the property anyways. With our properties, we're going to be here in 20, 30, 50 years, and so we ensure the upkeep of those. Additionally, if there's cash flow revenues that come off the property, if they aren't spent at the property, they go back to the state as part of the loan repayment. And so we work really diligently to keep those dollars local and reinvest them in our properties so that we can spend it on maintenance and upkeep. So I think this product type is going to age really well. We'll make sure that we're reinvesting. Right after we opened Palm Terrace 1, someone actually drove through the tuck under parking and hit part of one of the walls of the buildings. And so we fixed that right away, and we know things like that are going to happen. But if you look at our portfolio throughout the San Joaquin Valley, you see that we have a history of high quality upkeep as the properties age.
With our Measure O ordinance now, we're able to capture different types of tax revenue, but I think for a business, a construction business, it would have to be located within our zip code. Mm. So in regards to, you know, just all the material purchases, mm-hmm. which is in a phase like this, is going to be a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we did this on phase one because maybe we didn't have Measure O, but now we have a mechanism to capture that if the zip code for all the purchasing and things of that nature are done within
right.
Lindsay. Is that a possibility of being able to do that so the purchasing of materials can run through our zip code, thereby us being able to capture sales tax on the materials and anything else that is taxable with the phase two project?
Yeah, so I wasn't aware of that, so thank you for mentioning that. I have been involved in projects. I worked for the city of Tulare for a number of years, and I believe it was the Bardsley Crossing project where we did the exact thing that you just described, and we declared the zip code of purchase as the city of Tulare zip code. So I think that's absolutely something that we can look at doing. We have no opposition to doing that. It mm-hmm. just requires a conversation with our general contractor and sure. what materials they can do that for. So mm-hmm. we will absolutely look into that and see what we can do.
Great. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
Any questions? Anything else?
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
So much.
Thank you.
That's good information. With all that being said, what action would we like to take on Resolution 1958, Environmental Approval for Self-Help Enterprises, Palm Terrace 2 Project? 59, I'm sorry. Site plan review for Self-Help Enterprises.
Move for approval.
By Watson? Can I second? I second. And this is a roll call resolution, so roll call, clerk, please.
Councilmember Watson?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Cortez?
Aye.
Councilmember Sanchez?
Aye.
Councilmember Flores?
Aye.
Motion carries 4-0. Okay. Item 6, Resolution 1960, update to planning fees, presented by City Services and Planning Director Mr. Mike Camarena.
So Resolution 1960 proposes to amend the current fee schedule for planning and development to reflect the updated costs of processing planning and development applications. The current fee schedule was last updated in 2012 and is not able to recover costs associated with planning entitlement or development applications that are submitted. Lindsay Municipal Code 13.32.040 states that all fees shall be set to recover 100% of costs reasonably borne necessary to provide the listed regulation, product, or service. The comparative spreadsheet was included in your agenda packet showing current planning, development, and development tasks and the proposed amended fees. New planning fee tasks and fees for amended task items. The second spreadsheet, attached to Exhibit A, shows the proposed amended fee schedule. To establish the amended fee, staff and or consultant billing rates were multiplied by the average amount of time it typically takes to process the respective applications. And those hours were based on processing time of past projects. The proposed fees are expected to recover actual costs of the processing of planning and development applications. And with that, we have to answer any questions.
Questions, Council?
If you look at the chart showing the existing and the proposed, the items in yellow are proposed new tasks or application processes. So we currently have no specific home application permit, a sign review, a zoning text amendment request, or a zone change request. Those are being added as new items. Other items like preliminary plan review, they're simple, moderate, and complex, as at the very top. And we're proposing just to change that to a single fee. Same thing with site plan review, simple, moderate, and complex. The items that are highlighted in blue are ones that we're focusing on amending. If it's not highlighted, then it's either being removed or we're not proposing any changes to it. So this is the comparison side by side of existing versus proposed. And then the last page, if council approves, is what we would put into place and what we would post on the website, what office staff would be using to charge for different applications.
And you came up with these amounts because that's how much it costs to carry out whatever that we're talking about, right?
Correct.
So currently, when any of these permits are pulled or requests are pulled, we're losing money on them because
yes,
they're paying less than what it actually costs to carry
out. So, for example, the site plan review process we just did. I can only charge self-help enterprises, and we actually consider this a moderate. It's not complex. $200. If you look at the 20 pages of staff report that was developed, multiple meetings with the developer, looking at how we can integrate that with the needs of the city, and then are there needs of the city of pursuing the affordable housing and sustainable communities opportunity. And so $200 is what we'd be able to charge, based on the old piece.
Yeah. Well, my question to you, why is there only 4 that are being updated?
If you look
no,
at
no,
the
all
consumer
of them
pages,
are new.
Yeah.
All of them are.
2019, all of them are.
Anything that's highlighted in blue on the right-hand column is proposed for a change.
Yeah.
That's
these?
Increase, yeah.
Okay. Yellow are new?
Correct. The yellow are new task or application processes.
Mm-hmm. And the annexation processing?
Annexation doesn't propose to change. When you look at what is existing annexation processing, for example, $1,360, that is considered a deposit. So if it's a very simple annexation, then it could be that we can deliver the project for that amount. If it's a complex annexation, it's a deposit. We're going to charge whatever time and energy we put into it. And that any person proposing an annexation would know that.
Okay, so it's going to be on paper for anyone that comes in wanting to build or annex or anything. They'll know what the steps are. And
this is just the fee structure. This is just the fee structure. So the exact process, they would have to talk to staff. So if they're proposing an annexation, which is a pretty lengthy process, then they'll know. And most developers that would propose an annexation would know. This is going to take potentially 6 to 12 months, and it's a deposit for us to start the process and then do our processing and then go through the lot code process.
Okay. All righty. Thank you.
So how often is this supposed to be updated?
Good question.
It's every year.
Every year? So we're just behind 7?
Just.
And if this is approved, it would be amended starting when? Tomorrow? Today?
The next amendment?
If this is approved, when will this begin?
Immediately.
Okay, so if there's someone in the process right now trying to do something, they will be off of this?
Yeah, anybody that's in the queue now that has already submitted an application, we don't have the ability to go backwards and say, we changed. So if council approves it, any new applications would be subject to the new fees.
Okay.
Okay. I'm guessing that we're still probably under what many of the surrounding communities charge, or are we now compatible versus being 30 to 50% below?
Well, I think the answer is we're compatible, but compatible based on our matrix of salaries. Mm-hmm. So we can't look at Visalia and say, well, Visalia pays this. Well, they have a completely different.
Well, we shouldn't be. We should be worried about what we're doing here and other surroundings.
It's based on what Lindsay charges and what our salary matrix.
Very good.
Anything else? Nope.
Nope.
Approve that right now.
Before the
I'm looking at all of them.
Yeah.
Okay. What action would we like to take on Resolution 1960?
I already said it.
Oh, you did? I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. Well,
I didn't hear you either.
I didn't
hear
you. Okay. So,
move to approve.
Okay. Moved by Florence. Oh, second. Second by Sanchez. Resolution, so we need a roll call.
Councilmember Flores?
Yes. Aye.
Councilmember Sanchez?
Aye.
Councilmember Watson?
Aye.
Mayor Pro Tem Cortez?
Aye. Okay. Motion carries 4-0.
I have one question. I know it's already been approved, but for example, the sign review, $150, is that before or after it goes up?
Before.
Okay, just asking. Okay.
There's also a separate sign permit. And so planning looks at the proposed sign, how it fits into the criteria of commercial, with zoning of commercial, sizes that we have to deal with. Most of the time, it's a relatively simple process. That gets approved through this planning application, and then there's a separate building permit associated with the sign. So it's not like that includes an actual permit to construct. It does not. And then the building permit, to close the question, is based on the valuation.
One more question. So, the penalties, how are those set?
Penalties.
Do we have penalties? For example, I'm putting a sign up and I don't ask you, I just do it. And then you come out and you tell me what's up right there. Yeah.
Is that for businesses?
How is that
businesses
determined for each thing that is being violated?
That becomes a code enforcement.
Right.
Issue that's different than
Okay, so it's up to the code enforcer what they're going to charge? We don't have, like, something set already? You know what I mean?
It should be in the muni code.
Okay, so there should be already something set.
So, for example, I mean, you asked, when is that paid? Well, if they follow rules, they mm-hmm. would pay that up front. If somebody puts up a sign, mm-hmm. they're going to get probably dinged by code enforcement, mm-hmm. and then they're still going to have to go through this.
Right.
To make sure if it's compliant, it's usually not a big deal.
Right. No, yeah, I get that. But I'm just wondering, like, how is the penalty, you know,
like, did they just
determine, like, if it's, does it depend on how big the sign is? Does it depend just because they put it up and it's in violation because they didn't get a permit, but yet is within the code? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, how is that determined?
We want to work with a business mm-hmm. and education, first and foremost, who I didn't know I needed to do this. And we can look at what was put up, go through the planning review process and go through the permit process and try and avoid a citation if at all possible. But if some folk business owners are just very resistant, that's when code enforcement works with us and police to start the citation process.
Is there a way?
One more.
What are you thinking? I'm just trying to get information because I didn't know none of this. And if I were to build something or put something up, I mean, obviously I would have to ask, but I would know. I know who I would have to ask. There's other people who don't know that. So what I'm wondering is, and not a lot of people have a computer or are computer literate, right? I'll be one of them. But the little window thing that we have out here by in front of the city hall, is it possible that maybe we can put something there or somewhere? Just little tips like, oh, building a fence, this is what you need to know, what you should have or who you should ask. Or, you know, just Spanish and English, just, you know, and it could be once a month, something different.
We have informational pamphlets inside the entryway in our office.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to come in the door and look and see. Mm-hmm. It could be a sign, it could be a fence. It could be any number of things, and just informational pamphlets. But you have to make that first step
right.
Walk in.
Yeah.
So we are in the process, and you may have seen the video with Neva up there recently. We're in the process of going through the employee spotlight videos and in the process spotlights as well. And so we can start to incorporate this type of thing. Maybe when you go to enforcement, you can be talking about, hey, you see me because these different things have happened. Mm-hmm. Here are the places to go or the things to do. And so we can start incorporating what you're asking for in the other efforts we're making to educate. It kind of sneaks to control.
Right. Or even, what's the most, like, people violate? Like, is it putting up signs? Is it building a fence and it's too high? You know what I mean? Like, whatever the main thing that we see a lot, maybe hit on just that informational.
Well, and I know the thing that reaches the most, that's what I want to do. Which, and I'm mm-hmm. thinking our water bill. Everybody gets a water bill because everybody pays it.
I'm going to talk about the water bill.
But, you know, and I'm not saying a flyer or anything, mm-hmm. but just like a fact, like mm-hmm. quick fact. Did you know that? You mm-hmm. needed this. English and Spanish, and then maybe like a contact number. And then that, and maybe something different every so often. You know, not all the time, but just like in the summer, you know, I don't know. Things that happen a lot in the summer.
That's something we can talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it may be even more simple than that. Mm-hmm. So, hey, are you building something? Are you changing something?
Yeah.
Are you developing mm-hmm. something? In all those cases, you should talk to some services.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
Talk
to Mike.
Or Neva.
Anything
else? Call the office, even better.
No, don't even ask me because I'll probably go to a different place. Stay here all night.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you guys for that. Okay, so now moving on to item 7, request for future items. I just have a question. December, what are our meetings like?
I think we have one.
December 10th. Okay.
Obviously, not to come Christmas Eve.
That's what I was asking. If I have to come, I need to make plans. Okay. Any other requests for future items?
Yes, I would like I would really like staff to really update all the ordinances that are outdated, and that would be including the stipends for future city council members, because I know we had discussed that, and you said it hadn't been changed since...
It hasn't been changed since the 60s.
So since 1960. So,
yeah,
really. So I would like those two items to be put into the next agenda.
One item then is...
To update the ordinances and then the future, the stipends for the future city council members.
Okay. And so to update all ordinances, you want all of that on the next?
Well, I would like a report stating all of them have been completed.
Is that a lot, Mike? I see your face like, that's
yeah,
a lot.
Huge.
Yeah.
Really?
That's kind of general plan.
You're probably better off, I would say, like...
Breaking it down?
Well, let staff identify the ones that probably need to get updated the most.
Well, there you go. Identify.
Which we have been kind of doing already, right?
Yeah, I mean, as things come up, I mean, we go through them and you know, somebody sees something, we say, hey, we need to get this updated.
7 years ago?
Well, it just depends. So, like, for the fees, for example, 7 years ago was 2012. You're not even out of the recession yet, so, like, a lot of stuff not changing. And that's all based on fees on salaries, and if nothing's moving...
Well, but the salaries
have moved.
Yeah, the salaries have moved.
Yeah, but it happens over time. So, mm-hmm. it depends. And so,
right.
Like, the fees... That's just something you look at periodically.
I would just say, yeah, just
but that's,
identify the ones
yeah,
that
identify
are
the ones that are really,
or like a
really
plan,
out of
like
date.
Saying, like, these are still
plan.
From 1940,
yeah.
Or I don't know. We need
oh,
a whole lot. That's not
yeah,
no
because
product.
Yeah, because this is kind of embarrassing.
Well, that's not uncommon, though.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, like, if there's something, like, because, like, there's some things that just don't need to be changed. But,
no,
I mean, like, that,
well, then update it.
No, that don't need to be changed. I mean, if there's nothing, if the council doesn't have a policy decision, hey, we want to change this, then it will sit there. I mean, if you're like for the procedures for like code enforcement fines, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's an amount that's in the code that says, okay, it's $100 for the first offense and $200 for the second offense. That's not something that staff would normally say, oh, hey, we need to change this. That's
mm-hmm.
really up to the council, like whether you want to increase those or
mm-hmm.
decrease them. So we can look for things that we say, okay, hey, that's, for some reason, maybe the state has changed the law, and we say, okay, this is wrong. That clearly, from staff perspective, needs to get updated. But the other things that are in there is really up to the council. Like, is there something in there that is bugging you that, from a policy
well,
standpoint,
necessary.
You want to change?
Whatever
that's
necessary.
What's necessary. I mean, just like what we were discussing with the consultant, I think, a couple of months ago, it was totally... We were totally in the dark of what we needed to do, and I don't want to be in the dark anymore.
Turn on the light.
Yeah, but I would tell the council that if you're saying what's necessary, like I would look at that and say, okay, only what is not in compliance with the law anymore, right? So anything else is not necessary.
So
and that's up to the council's
yeah.
policy discretion
mm-hmm.
to say, hey. We don't like this, and to me, that's not necessary. That's whatever you guys want to decide, and we can change it.
So is there a particular area or?
Well, it's kind of overall because the thing is, as council, we only know what is being brought to our attention. If there are things that are not brought to our attention, we don't know about it.
Well, but we don't as staff, we don't know what's in your attention and what you have, like what is on your radar. Like, what do you like and not like? I mean, it would be impossible for staff to do that.
So, for example, if somebody, and I'm just thinking out loud, if somebody is saying, like, hey, I'm going to use a yard sale signs again because we used that not too long ago. They have a lot of questions or concerns about that. I think that it'd be a good idea to maybe review or update if needed and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if people are bringing questions to us or concerns,
mm-hmm.
like he says, you know, then that warrants attention, but if nobody's saying anything.
Yeah, but just like the consultant the last time around, these were laws that had changed and the ordinances didn't change with them.
Yeah,
that's my concern.
And that is, to me, that's easy because we can identify, okay, hey, this is not in compliance with the law.
no big deal. We can bring that back to council.
Okay. So mean, you want to know that's so ordinances yeah. that are not.
Well, how about we start with that?
Yeah, so,
I mean, we don't want to be.
Don't make it difficult, Mario.
No, I mean, that's very easy. I mean, we can go through the code and figure out, okay, hey, this is just not in compliance because the law is different. We need to update it. And there might be, I don't know, but if there's a significant amount, I would say let's bring it back to you. We'll bring you a list, and we could say, hey, we're going to tackle this set that are not in compliance, or then we'll move on down the list.
That would be great.
Okay.
So you'll need some kind of motion on just for council's consideration, and so the stipend updates is one that we can definitely do by the next one.
Okay.
The other list with the different events we have come up with staff and Thanksgiving this week, that's a lot to go through the code and find all of those before our next council.
Just say the,
so if you're using in the January that review, then we get to that point. But if you push us to get that by the 10th of December, it may not be complete.
It won't be. That's like a that's a big task.
That's a very
well,
big task.
Can it be just one at a time? I mean, it doesn't have to be all of it, right?
Don't yeah, it shouldn't be a huge task if everything was up to date, is what I'm thinking.
Well, yeah, but you don't know until you actually go through it. That's the thing. Like, difficult. We have to go, in order to do what we talked about, we have to go through the entire code and say, okay, hey, as we get a list, I mean, we still got to keep moving through every line of the code and make sure that it's still compliant. We can start putting them on the list. Like, say, hey, we think that we may need to tackle this issue. But I personally
would say whatever had to do with services.
What do you mean, Mr. I don't know.
That would
anything that would have to, like, residents.
That would personally have to,
that residents pay anything that they would pay. How would I say? Let me see. Because water. Well, that's already done. And then, what else do we have? What else? Sewer and all that's attached.
So most everything we do is get touch a resident one way or another. So I don't know if that really limits the scope that much. If you want to vote as a discussion item for next time to say, hey, we want to identify the best plan to move forward this process, then we can do that. So is it a list we bring you every month? You get five new ones? Something like that. But for this request for future items is not for us to go and do something. It's
something
to
discuss.
Right. To vote on whether or not you want us to do it.
Okay.
Should we consider creating an ad hoc committee to work with staff to identify those things that are really necessary to look at?
That could be helpful. All of council has a copy of the code, so we can definitely use some help.
Yeah, that it seems to me would be a good way to go because, I mean, we're talking universal here, and I mean, I don't know if we have the budget to have staff chasing after everything.
The thing is, there are things that we are working on as a city. Shouldn't it be logical that you would look into it and ensure that everything was up to date?
Well, I'm pretty confident that any type of change that needs to go forward, just like we saw tonight with the self-help, has got to be to code. It's got to meet environmental issues. And you know, I'm sure city services, they are all over that, making sure everything is up to code. Mario, when it comes to that, you know, Brett, all of that's got to be up to current code.
I'm just saying that the last time, a couple of months ago, we were in the dark.
Was that on the...
Well, can it just be just up to code, whatever has to be within the law, like,
so
major... I would think, because I understand what you're saying, it is a lot to go
through. So this discussion tonight on these fees is about column and a half worth of text in the code. And it's probably 3 inches thick.
Right.
And so there's going to be different things in there. We don't mind going through it and trying to identify those, but we need to balance the resources we have. Mm-hmm. And slash other responsibilities. And so if we want to have a future agenda item, it says, hey, to discuss either create an ad hoc committee to govern this or to give staff some type of direction that night, we can do that and move forward with it. That night is going to be a busy one for all of you because you've got the interviews from CNN that night. You have two major presentations that night. One is the audit and one is the housing and other elements.
On the
10th. It's a feedback night already. So if you had another long discussion item that's busy, if you want to just go and start looking through, I don't mind just starting that process and kind of seeing what's like an immediate need. But we may want to hold off till January just to have a discussion amongst council. Do you want an ad hoc? Do you want some other mechanism to track this stuff down?
Well, it's... Like I said, I just think it's common sense that if we're working on something, that we make sure that we have all our ducks in a row.
So there's steps and processes to all of this, and staff handles those processes every day. There's so knowing that there's things in the code that may be out of balance, we don't really understand that. But there's a lot of things we're already working on each day, and there's only so many hours to get the work done. And so if we need to move off of some other priorities onto this priority, then council can give that direction.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is, are we okay with, at the next meeting, December 10th meeting, just discuss a stipend for future council members, and then in January maybe have a further discussion as to how we want to
proceed
with making sure that codes are updated and maybe potentially putting a list together and prioritizing
areas. Yeah. That sounds good.
Okay. I just, if I may, maybe we could give staff just a little more time and set February 11th as the day for that.
For the codes.
For the codes. Just to give them a little more time so they could be a little bit.
When's the meeting in January?
So January 14th and 28th are the meetings in January. I believe it's the 11th and the 27th in February.
14th and 28th in January?
Yes.
I won't be here for the first one.
So February, we went to February. Are you okay with that?
Okay.
You guys okay with that?
Yeah, that way you can think about. Okay.
So you just need a motion on both of those.
Okay. Can we have a motion?
Motion to approve?
Okay, a motion to approve future agenda items. Second?
I'll second.
Thank you. Councilmember Sanchez. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Motion carries. And now we are down to item A, adjourn. Can we get a motion?
So moved.
I'll second.
you didn't get asked for that one.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah, thank you.